report. We'll go on to the next case of the day, which is Mueller versus Weider. And one counsel, appellate's counsel, I believe, Mr. Zwatch, is going to appear by letter. Mr. Zwatch, is that, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
You're doing a pretty good job.
would you like to introduce yourself so that I can try again?
Yeah, Brian Schlock, I represent the appellant, Mr. Mueller.
Very good, thank you. And Mr. Koenig, you're here today.
I am, Your Honor, thank you.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Zwatch, can you hear us clearly and see us?
I can.
Very good. Then you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Brian Schwab. I represent the appellant in this case, Richard Mueller. Okay, now the timer has started. I represent the appellant, Richard Mueller, in this case, and I appreciate everyone letting me appear by Zoom. No one would rather be there than me right now, especially after this last week. So it's one of the great strengths of our legal system that those charged with the enforcement of the rule of law are further tasked with the determination of their ability to enforce. In this case, Mueller versus Cork and Weider is a case where such a finding must be made. The fundamental issue here presented on appeal is whether the substitute defendants, Marjorie Cork and Carl Weider, can be ordered to reimburse Richard Mueller pursuant to an agreement that Richard Mueller had with their predecessor in interest, John Weider. This case has been going on for quite some time. It's gone from the county court to district court to the court of appeals, then back to the county court, the district court, and now here before the Supreme Court.
Counsel, at what point?
The issue centers around this, the court of appeals ruling prior that this had to be tried as a civil contempt proceeding.
Counsel, you may not be able to hear us. It's sort of hard on WebEx to ask a question because there's a little bit of a delay. So I'm sorry to interrupt. At what point in that chronology of the case did John Weider die?
John Weider died, I believe, before the Court of Appeal, after the district court's first ruling finding in favor of Richard Mueller, but before the Court of Appeals had made its ruling.
So I didn't see a suggestion of death or a notice of death anywhere in our appellate record. But you agree that John Weider died on October 9th, 2017?
Yes.
Was the Court of Appeals notified in any respect of that death?
That I do not know. I don't believe that they were.
And what's the effect? What does our case law say the effect of that is? In a judicial proceeding, if one of the parties dies, what is the legal effect?
Well, here I don't think there is a legal effect because there was still this binding agreement between John Weider and Richard Mueller. I mean, the elements, John Weider's performance under their agreement had occurred, was needed to have occurred back in 7 days in December of 2015, and he failed to make that performance according to my client and according to the county court. And so from that viewpoint, there's a court order that said he had to make this performance. He failed to do so. The court ordered that he failed to do so. And that, you know, order has to be respected and enforced in some way.
I don't think you answered my question about what the effect of his death was on the Court of Appeals jurisdiction.
I don't know that there was any effect on it. The civil contempt, this case wasn't a civil contempt case when it started. It was dealing with a money judgment. And then the Court of Appeals, sua sponte, brought this issue up at the oral argument. So I understand your question as it relates to how the Court of Appeals may or may not have ruled in that first order, but as I understand it, you know, the case itself is still the same case. There's still this order out there that says that there's a money judgment that should go against Mr. Weider. And even if he's passed, I think that issue still has to get resolved by the court system. Exactly, the court has said that this has to happen if certain elements aren't met, and it's been proven that they haven't been met. So that's how it has to be resolved. I hope I answered that question.
Thank you.
At what point did you or your client discover that Mr. Weider had passed?
I think I actually learned it at that Court of Appeals hearing myself. I had taken this case over for an attorney who had been diagnosed with a brain tumor. So I think I started right when that Court of Appeals case had started. So the first I had known about was at that Court of Appeals hearing.
At
I was speaking to my client. I'm sure he knew.
At oral arguments? Was that at oral arguments? Is when you discovered it?
For me, yes.
But your client knew it before that?
I would think so. Okay. So I think the county court actually summarized how this proceeding should be handled best. And that while this is a civil contempt proceeding, it involves a contract whereby the parties agreed to the entry of a money judgment if the terms of the contract were not met. Is there a question? I'm sorry.
No question.
To reach its dismissal, the district court relied on the case of Hackler v. Hackler. Dealing with this issue of how contempts are handled after someone has passed. And from what I can find, this is actually an issue of first impression in Nebraska. And I would encourage the court to distinguish Hackler or to just reject it as not being good law for the state of Nebraska for a couple of reasons, specifically as it relates to this case. Hackler was a divorce case, and divorces do abate at death. And marriage is a very personal contract. It's literally till death do you part is that contract. But here, Weider and John Weider and Richard Mueller, they actually had an immediate agreement that was mediated through the assistance of the state of Nebraska. That agreement was subsequently entered into as a court order by the Boyd County Court. And so it's not exactly the same, even though that's the civil divorce case and what's been going on here. Three state Supreme Courts have also rejected the reasoning of Hackler, finding that it's not very good law and produces unjust results, and it clearly undermines the credibility of the court. And the last thing, I'll reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, but I think the important thing when we're talking about this contempt proceeding is to focus on the type of punishment, and that would be going back to the Wasserman case. And here, the county court didn't punish anyone for contempt that they could purge. It simply found that a money judgment, which is all my client has ever asked for, be ordered. So I'll reserve the remaining of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Koenig, you may approach.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Lyle Koenig. I appear for Carl Weider and Margene Cork.
Are both of them still living?
Yes.
I ask respectfully.
Yes, ma'am, they are.
On what day did John Weider die?
I'm not sure.
Was it October 9th, 2017?
It might have been.
Are you the attorney for the estate proceedings?
Yes.
Did you at any time file a suggestion of death in this case?
No.
Thank you.
There's a fundamental reason why you should affirm the District Court of Boyd County. And that's because it is impossible to prove what has to be proven in a contempt action in the absence of the alleged contemnor. In other words, a contempt action is personal in nature. The reason we say that there is a problem with jurisdiction is the fact that in a contempt action, there has to be a showing of willful disobedience, and that is an essential element of a finding of contempt. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. How far back does the problem with jurisdiction go? You're focused on the problem with jurisdiction during the county court proceedings in 2020 on the civil contempt.
That's right.
Is that the beginning of the jurisdictional problem, or did it start sooner?
Well, I think in this appeal, that's the fundamental issue.
What's the jurisdictional issue?
The jurisdictional issue is that John Weider is dead, and the only way that you can find somebody in contempt is if that person is there, alive, and has an ability to purge himself of contempt.
Did the court's order offer a purge plan?
No. But
so is it a contempt?
Well, he found him in willful contempt, Your Honor.
Is it a contract or a contempt?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Same question.
Well, it's a contempt action. It was tried as a contempt action. And the district court,
but
excuse
how
me.
Was tried.
What?
It doesn't really matter. It's what the judge orders.
Well, the
doesn't
judge.
Doesn't it have to be a purge plan to make it a contempt?
No.
It doesn't have to.
No. But it has to, not a civil, not, well, I'm not certain about that, Your Honor. But I do know this, the statute 252121, subparagraph 3, says clearly that you have to have, the court has to make a conclusion that the alleged contemnor is in willful disobedience of a court order to find him in contempt. The statute says that. And then there, excuse
me. Mr. Koenig.
Yes, sir.
The Court of Appeals in its earlier decision
yeah.
characterized this proceeding as contempt.
Yes, it did.
But does its opinion reflect any knowledge of the death of Mr. Weider?
I don't know if it does, Your Honor. I don't know.
If it doesn't, what does that tell us?
Well, as far as this appeal is concerned.
How could they send it back for a contempt proceeding if the contemnor was deceased? You think they would do that?
Well, I don't know. They are the ones. It didn't, Your Honor, it didn't come to them as a contempt action. They decided it was a contempt action and sent it back to us as a contempt action, and that's the way we tried it. Now, I don't know if they had what they had in mind when they sent it back, but that's what they told us to do, is to try it as a contempt action. And the county court tried it as a contempt action, and the reason why this case needs to be affirmed is because the county court made a finding of willful disobedience by John Weider, and the county court could not do that. And the reason he couldn't do it is because he goes on to say that a feigned attempt to comply with a court order, knowing that you are not fully complying, is enough to establish willful disobedience. And that flies in the face of the case of State versus Tolkien, which says that there is no presumption of knowledge of a violation of a court order. And what the county court did in this case was presume that there was a violation, and he couldn't do that. And that's why, and the reason he couldn't do it is because in a contempt action, the court has to find that there's that the contemnor violated a court order intentionally with knowledge of the fact that the act was in violation of the court order. And if he does that, then the burden shifts to us. And then we have to show why we were unable to comply. And then we have to show that the failure was not self-induced. And then we have to show that we made a good faith, reasonable effort to comply. Well, in this case, John Weider being dead, there was no way for him to explain why he was unable to comply. And there's no evidence that his failure to comply was self-induced, but this record contains abundant evidence of a reasonable attempt to comply with the court order.
So it's a failure of proof.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say there is a
contemptuous act.
May pardon, Your Honor?
A contemptuous act,
yeah,
was alleged to have occurred when he repaired the fence line, not in accordance with a statutory requirement.
That's right.
So that evidence could have been available and could have been proven in any contempt, even if Mr. Weider was deceased.
No, Your Honor, that's not so. Because the cases say that in order to find somebody in contempt, you have to establish a state of mind. And the only way to establish...
The state of mind was at the time of the contemptuous act, not at the time of the trial.
That's right.
Well, he wasn't deceased at the time of the contemptuous act.
Yeah, that's right, Your Honor. But because he's dead now, or he was dead at the time, dead at the time of the trial, he didn't have an opportunity to come in and say to the judge, listen, I was gravely ill, and that's why I couldn't go out there, and that's why it was impossible. Or we were in a 7-day blizzard, and we couldn't get out there and fix the fence, and that's why it was impossible. And if there's a showing of impossibility, you cannot find somebody in contempt. So,
counsel, we've been talking a lot about the contempt proceedings.
Yes, Your Honor.
And one of the things that I keep stumbling over in the record is the fact that neither the original application for order to show cause nor the original order to show cause are anywhere in our appellate record. So it's not really clear to me what Mr. Weider was ordered to show cause on, what aspect of the original order. So help me understand that, and then if you would please direct me to where in the record I can see that.
Your Honor, with respect to the first question, I apologize. I did not represent Mr. Weider at that time. But the reason the Court of Appeals reversed this and sent it back was because the trial court, the county court, ordered Mr. Weider to go forward and show cause at the trial or hearing.
Show cause as to what?
As to why he had not fixed the fence. And
was that the basis of the application for order to show cause? Come in and tell him why you didn't fix the fence? Or was it come in and show why I'm not entitled to a money judgment because I went in and fixed the fence?
I think it was because, I think it was a show cause as to why he did not fix the fence.
Well, and you see, the trouble is we can't tell what the show cause was.
Yeah, but
it's hard without a measuring stick. It is hard to analyze the show cause proceedings and the civil contempt finding. I don't know what our measuring stick ought to be.
Well, I just want to add one more thing. The Court of Appeals reversed though on that for that reason. They said that Mr. Weider did not have the burden of going forward and showing cause. That was the burden of the plaintiff. That was at the first trial, and that is the reason they reversed.
Is there anything in our record that can help us understand what was the focus of the show cause? The order to show cause.
It seems to me that that ought to be in the record, but if it's not,
If it's not, what do we look to, sir?
If it's not, I think what you look to is this case, was tried as a contempt action. It is a contempt action. There is abundant law in the state of Nebraska that says that you cannot find a dead person in contempt of court. And well, for
where
that
is
reason,
that case law?
Where's the Nebraska case law?
The Nebraska case law that deals with the question of whether or not a civil contempt proceeding abates at death.
All right. All right. Forgive me. I suppose that is somewhat implicit by the fact that there's case law says that there is no presumption of contempt. If someone is dead, you don't know what his state of mind was, and the law says you can't presume what that state of mind was. So you, there's no showing that he's in willful disobedience of a court order. So, it, and that's the way we tried it, and it seems to me that that's the way it ought to be decided.
Thank you.
And I'm out of time, Your Honor. May I withdraw? Or are there any other questions?
I think you just want to sit down.
Well, I've answered more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We have time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute, 52 seconds.
1 minute and 52 seconds, Mr. Swatch.
Thank you. May it please the court. I wanted to address a couple of the questions that were brought up there, specifically about the application for order to show cause. I think for the court to get some type of idea of exactly what was asked for by my client, they could actually look to the county court order, which is in the record and is a well-drafted and thought-out order where it specifically notes that what my client asked for in his application was in order to show cause for why a money judgment shouldn't be brought against them. And that relates back to the December 14, 2015 order and the mediation agreement that specifically has in there as the last line of the agreement that if John Weider fails to make the repairs, Mueller can go ahead and do that and obtain the money judgment.
So may I interrupt? There is this time lag, and I'm not sure this is helpful, or I'm just poorly informed, but do the statutes surrounding fences inform us as to what might be on the table in that if there's an order to fix a fence and it doesn't occur, then the neighbor who seeks the repair does it and gets money? Is that part of the statutory scheme, or is that relevant?
It's relevant in the sense that those statutes give the authority to the parties to negotiate. There's nothing specifically that says it has to be kind of conditional like this. It just says that if there is a mediation agreement reached between the parties, that that is the agreement, and that it further says that the county court shall enter that agreement as an order. And this court dealt with this in Everett v. Sir, just after this Court of Appeals case, dealing with kind of these conditional orders that people with fences are making.
Right, what the objective of the litigation is to have a peaceful repaired line.
Well, yes, it is. I'm out of time. I appreciate the court's attention to this matter.
Thank you very much, counsel. This concludes arguments in Mueller versus Weider. So you are excused, and thank you, Mr. Watch, for appearing by WebEx. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Brown.